If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. Perspective with Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I am Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. Independent journalist Riley Wagaman joins me today. Once again, I'm very happy to say. You can find Riley's work at his Substack, which is edwardslavsquat.substack.com. And his pieces are frequently republished by Off Guardian at offguardian.org. It's always a pleasure to speak with Riley, and we've got some, well, quite important developments to get into today. So let's jump in. Riley, welcome back. How are you?
Jesse, my friend, I am doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I can't complain, but there are some worrying signs with regard to our allies, as it were, which we'll get into. But I want to first start with a piece you published on Monday of this week. Russia begins vaccinating mobilized citizens, the subheader of which reads, evading mobilization and mandatory vaccination could lead to 10 years in prison. And following that, on the 4th, you published another piece about Russian doctors demanding an end to compulsory COVID injection for mobilized citizens. And you noted that this same group of doctors has been trying as best they can with the limited information that's available in Russia to document deaths linked to the Sputnik V injection. And on the 5th of October, you published a piece, "The Denialism About Russia's Anti-Human COVID Policies Has to Stop." And this starts to get into some of the pushback you've received. Pushback is putting it mildly, with regard to the first two pieces I cited. And you followed this piece up with a fourth one you published today, titled, let me just scroll here, "The Ones We Should Be Fighting Will Live On," which is, as you put it, a friendly reminder, and we'll get into that as well. But let's start with the facts on the ground, as it were, and the compulsory injection of the 300,000 mobilized reservists in Russia. What are the facts? Not hearsay, but what are the facts as you've laid them out in your piece?
Look, it's interesting how much pushback this has all gotten, just because actually the facts are very unambiguous and straightforward. And these are the facts. This is the reality. In June 2021, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the chief sanitary doctor of the Russian Ministry of Defense, issued a decree that said all military personnel who didn't have some sort of condition preventing them from doing so need to be vaccinated against coronavirus. And we know that this decree was implemented because in December 2021, Putin praised Shoigu, his defense minister, for achieving a close to 100% vaccination rate within the Russian military. And by the way, this policy included conscripts, which means that Russians who are called up for mandatory military service, which is sort of part of how the Russian military works, they have this conscription system even during peacetime, were also required to get vaccinated. Now, the question was, and this is a question that immediately came to my mind when partial mobilization was announced on September 21st, was, is this same compulsory vaccination decree going to apply to mobilized citizens? the 300,000 Russians who were mobilized at the end of September. And, you know, initially I wasn't sure. And when, as I started looking, I found not just evidence, but proof that the Russian government says that this same compulsory vaccination decree applies to mobilized Russians. This is listed in very clear Russian, which if you don't, you know, read or understand Russian, you can just put into your favorite translator. Very simple to understand. They cite the exact same decree from June 2021, and they say that this same compulsory vaccination policy applies to all categories of military personnel, including those called up for mobilization. We have a news report, a Russian media news report, where a journalist called up a hotline, a federally operated hotline that's used to answer questions about partial mobilization. And the journalist said, are Russians who haven't been vaccinated exempt from mobilization? And the answer they got was, no, if you haven't been vaccinated, we'll vaccinate you once you join your unit, once you're called, once you are mobilized. Mm-hmm. You have at least three regions that we know of. It could be many more, but three that have publicly stated, it's Rostov, Penza, and Tatarstan, that they are starting or have already started to implement this federal decree. More recently, this happened this morning, a high-ranking member of the Duma, the first deputy chairman of the State Duma Committee on Health Protection, had an interview with Radio Sputnik, so this is Russian state media, and he stated explicitly, and here I'm quoting, as far as I know, the decree on vaccination against COVID-19 for troops is still in effect. And he goes on to say, I believe that the mobilized must be vaccinated against COVID-19. It is important that combat capability does not decrease due to the coronavirus. I think that it is necessary to vaccinate and revaccinate those who are mobilized, as well as the rest of the military. So here's the situation. There is no question that Russia has compulsory vaccination for the military. In fact, it has very, very strict compulsory vaccination for the military. Of all the segments of society that have been subjected to compulsory vaccination, probably it's been the most strict in the military. So this idea that Russia doesn't force these unproven genetic injections onto their troops is just, it's, you are raping reality by claiming this, because it could not be more obvious. There's just no way to deny this. The only thing that's up for debate now is how many mobilized Russians will actually be subjected to compulsory vaccination. And that's just an open question that nobody has an answer to. And I have never claimed that all 300,000 mobilized Russians are immediately going to be injected overnight. I simply stated, right. We now know I had this question. Does this policy apply to the mobilized Russians? Yes, it does. There are several regions who have publicly stated that they are going to begin vaccinating the mobilized troops. And that's the end of it. And the point I made about how this has become one of the world's strictest compulsory vaccination policies is also absolutely true, because if you are a Russian who does not want to, and there are, by the way, there are Russians who don't want to mobilize for all kinds of reasons. And it's not just because they're some sort of fifth columnist liberal traitor. If you're a Russian who has spent the last 2 years evading and trying to get around compulsory vaccination decrees, which have been tied to employment in many sectors in basically every region of the country, and now you're being mobilized and you say, forget it. I've sacrificed a lot already, and I don't want to get vaccinated, and I'm not going to mobilize. If you get caught evading mobilization, you can face 10 years in prison. So under these circumstances, someone who doesn't want to get vaccinated, who evades mobilization because they don't want to get vaccinated, and is caught evading mobilization, you can serve a decade in prison for that. And this is just a fact. People, I don't know what the... I generally am shocked and almost amused by these attempts to pretend like this isn't very straightforward, because it's very, very straightforward.
Yes. All one has to do is use simple deductive logic to figure this out.
And not even deductive logic, though, Jesse. All you have to do is read the official government sources, the official government information portals. Just list it right there.
Well, yes, yes, yes. I'm saying in terms of the possibility of facing 10 years in prison not wanting to be injected with an experimental toxin, there's deductive logic involved there, although it's very simple to understand what the consequences are for somebody who's called up and does not want to get injected. As you said, it's possible they could face 10 years in prison, because what that equates to is evading military service. So to put what you said another way, Russia has essentially just enacted the strictest injection mandate in the world since the COVID-19 nightmare began.
I mean, I would say one of, I don't know if it would count as the strictest, but it's certainly strict. Okay. It's certainly unprecedented, even in many of the sort of, you know, extremely, you know, these Western nations that frankly have really bought on hard to COVID tyranny. This surpasses many of the strictest policies enacted in the West.
Yes, yes, one of, I should say. And you end your first piece, I believe this is the conclusion of it, yes. You conclude it by writing, Russians are being asked to risk their lives in an increasingly dubious war in Ukraine, and in return, they are being forcibly injected with an unproven and most likely expired genetic slurry. It's a very good point you make right there, and absolutely true. And just to touch on the expired point quickly, RIA Novosti published a piece on the 4th of October. Shelf life of Sputnik V vaccine increased to 18 months. Which, if you know anything about these injections and what it takes to keep them stable, this is assuming that they work, which we know they don't, but what it takes to keep them stable, the storage required for that, how the elements within this serum can change over time. And we're not even talking about whether there's consistency in the formula of different vials. We have no idea. So just given that, extending the shelf life to 18 months is categorically insane. There's no other word for it.
Well, exactly. And this is because Russia has 100 million doses of Sputnik V in warehouses that it can't get rid of because nobody wants them. And they've gone so far, the Russian Ministry of Health has gone so far where experts within the ministry have advised people to basically swap out doses. So basically they're saying, you know, if you can get boosted with the second dose of Sputnik V, even though Sputnik Light, the booster, is the first dose. And the reason they're doing that is because they have just as many expired second doses as they do, you know, first dose Sputnik Lights. But of course, Jesse, we shouldn't worry about this, because maybe by the time the Ukraine war is over, Russia will have finished development of the two different mRNA vaccines that they're currently developing and were recently announced late last month. So, you know, maybe we'll have fresh, new, delicious mRNA vaccines to give the mobilized citizens of Russia.
Which, it must be said, Russia is developing two mRNA injections at the same time that China is developing at least one of its own mRNA
that's correct.
Injection. That's correct. So both
I mean, if Sputnik V is so safe and effective, why do you need to develop two separate mRNA vaccines? What's the reasoning here? And how can you have these Russian health officials or with the Gamaleya Center who developed Sputnik V saying, oh, this mRNA stuff is so amazing. Everyone's using it. It has all these advantages. It's more cost efficient. You can inject it into someone once every month instead of once every 6 months, which he says is the disadvantage with the viral vector AstraZeneca copy paste model that Sputnik V is based on. So it's really shocking that Russia is saying this stuff. Meanwhile, everyone, you know, in the disaffected West understands perfectly well what an mRNA shot is, but I haven't seen a single news report outside of my little blog in English language that has mentioned the fact that Russia is now fully, and in every aspect, is fully on board with the clot shots. So if there's any doubt in your mind now, I just don't get it. Why aren't people talking about this? I'm baffled, mystified.
Me too. I've been bringing it up in almost every show this week, every conversation this week, because I want people to know about it. It's huge, and it's a huge threat to humanity as well. And we need to bring it up too, because we're incessantly being told to recognize Russia, China, India, etc., as rising and resistance to the collective West, as it's been put and is now a term that's being used everywhere by those who are in any sort of pro-Russia camp. Very interesting how that phrase was spit out and then picked up by all the usual suspects. But how are these countries offering any sort of alternative or resistance when they are going right along with, next to nuclear war, the biggest threat to humanity that we face right now? It's not an alternative, and it's not resistance. And because that's become such a dominant narrative that we're supposed to accept, and a lot of us who don't accept it are shunned because we don't accept it, because we're somehow
we have each other, though, Jesse. Don't worry. We have
each other. That's true. That's true. But we're shunned as pro-NATO or pro-Nazi or some nonsense. Yeah. No, but I think,
you know, it's also
the point.
Sorry, not to.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what I find so interesting about how Russia is covered now is you have this situation where, on the one hand, basically, this is what I would say. In my opinion, Russia is now this sort of fascinating controlled experiment, because if we believe what we've been told, Russia has basically karate chopped all ties with, you know, the Davos degenerate West, and is now trying to pursue its own chorus, you know, and it's developing mRNA shots. So shouldn't this worry people? I mean, if you do believe that Russia has, you know, cut the umbilical cord with this very deeply anti-human agenda that has taken root across the world, what does it mean that Russia is still doing the same things that everyone else is doing? In fact, is accelerating these processes and expanding them? Because it just doesn't, it's absolutely shocking to me that you can make the argument now that Russia has taken this totally different turn, because if that was the case, surely at the very least there should be no new mRNA shots in Russia. But it seems that mRNA shots are actually extremely multipolar. So, so there you go.
Yes. And this comes at the same time as Russia is reintroducing its mask regimes. And I use that term because that's how it translates when you go from Russian to to English. The phrase translates as actually mask regime. which I think is spot on. So that's being pushed, reintroduced heavily, just as it is here in the West, along with the development of new injections, mRNA-based injections, and still a push, a coercive push, I would say, for people to continue to submit themselves to these injections. And there's also the use of biosurveillance, which you've covered as well in Russia, to, in one case you recently pointed out, to track down individuals who were accused of evading mobilization. And at least one of them turned out to be mistakenly mobilized. Can you talk about that quickly?
Well, yeah, maybe we should back up though and point out that, so Moscow has an extremely sophisticated facial surveillance system. And when COVID arrived sort of in February, March, 2020, Sergei Sobyanin, the mayor of Moscow, the technocratic robot who controls Moscow, he came out and said, we have this amazing facial surveillance recognition system, and we can use it to make sure that no one is violating quarantine. So if you are a suspected, you know, COVID carrier and our cameras catch you outside when you're not supposed to be outside, we can nab you. And now with partial mobilization, there are reports in Russian media. These are reports, but who knows, you know, maybe we should take them with a grain of salt, but they claim that at least five Muscovites within the city who were accused of evading mobilization were identified using this facial recognition surveillance system. And apparently at least four of them were brought in. So, you know, it's so interesting how we see it's sort of, you know, this Ukraine war is sort of becoming COVID tyranny by other means. You know, when COVID ran out of steam, and it's true, the mask rules are still in effect in some parts of Russia. So is compulsory vaccination at the regional level. And I'm not talking about the mobilization aspect, but I think around the world, people to a large extent, and not just in Russia, are pretty sick of it. And incredibly, this increasingly bizarre and extremely dangerous conflict has taken on many of the control mechanisms that were first introduced as biosecurity measures 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I suspect that's because they were never intended to be done away with at any time.
How dare you? How dare you, Jesse? This is for our safety and health.
Yeah. All for our well-being.
For the greater good. It's for the greater good.
Yes. It's for the greater good of the special military operation. So we should take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk about the group of Russian doctors who have demanded an end to compulsory COVID injection for mobilized citizens, because they bring up some very important points. And not that your word isn't good enough, that's not what I'm implying, but they are a significant group of physicians who are pointing out the same problem that you are and campaigning against it, which is just another layer of evidence that, yes, this is indeed happening. This isn't a hoax, as some of your critics have put it, which we'll get into a bit later, because that's an important aspect of what we're talking about here. So let's take a quick pause, and I'll be right back with Riley Wagaman on TNT Radio after this.
You should hear what Joseph Arthur is talking about.
Reason has left the building, especially when the building is a liberal arts college. I think many of us have learned these last few years that common sense is no match for mass formation psychosis, and that identity is going to trump principles almost every single time. The mask is useless as a protector of health and is actually working against health. It hinders clean oxygen and traps bacteria worn all day submerged and hiding in plain sight. It signals to everyone that danger is here and that fear is a value rather than something to ignore and overcome. The benefits of wearing a mask is none whatsoever. The sacrifice to wearing one is total. Your face disappears into a hot, wet mess, and that smile that you might see from across the room, the kind of smile that makes your day, is now nowhere to be found. As with so many other supposed COVID precautions, the sacrifice, the things that you give up, seem to be sidelined from the discussion. Instead, a safety that isn't real is elevated to a status it never comes close to earning.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
When the forgotten poor are suffering and in need of healing, they wait for a ship unlike any other. Mercy Ships, the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. Heroes of mercy, like these.
Every human being has the right to be treated as human, to have a place at the table of the human race.
If you could just see the look in the patient's eyes or the smiles that you get when lives have been changed, then it would make it all worth it.
We bring hope and healing to one person, but that person belongs to a family, and that family belongs to a community.
Together, these heroes of mercy and friends like you bring hope and healing to those who desperately need it.
Thank you!
Thank you!
To learn more about Heroes of Mercy, go to mercyships.org today.
It's never a burden to fight for what's right. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Perspective here on TNT Radio, where we are live 24/7. I'm Jesse Zerwell, and I'm speaking with independent journalist Riley Wagaman, and we are discussing the injection decree that is on the books for reservists who have been mobilized in Russia to fight in Ukraine. Of course, this is not just confined to them. It applies to all military personnel and extends outside of that to the larger population in many ways. And Riley has been publishing about this all week. And despite the overwhelming empirical evidence that this is indeed happening, he's received a lot of pushback, which I've taken note of and have been following, particularly on Telegram. And this is pushback by people who we would otherwise consider our allies in the fight against the COVID-19 nightmare and all of its attendant nightmares. And we'll get into that in a bit, because it's a very disturbing phenomenon that's taking place. But first, Riley, I want to ask you about the response by the Independent Association of Physicians in Russia to the injection decree for mobilized citizens.
Well, this is a group of physicians and doctors that have been extremely active over the last 2 years They have done remarkable work. First off, they wrote these letters to the Russian Ministry of Defense, the Federal Biomedical Agency, the Federal Agency for Human Well-Being, and I think Rostat as well, the Federal Statistics Service, asking for just basic information about deaths within Russia among those who have been fully vaccinated. Not even asking if, you know, there had been any sort of reported side effects, but just the number of Russians who are fully vaccinated who have died. And what was so funny about this is that basically the, you know, the Russian Ministry of Russian Health Ministry would refer them to, you know, the Federal Biomedical Agency, and then the Federal Biomedical Agency would refer them to Rostat. And it was this merry-go-round, you know, stonewalling thing that they did, that the federal government did. So they never got an answer with any of this. And of course, anyone who's familiar with Russia's lack of transparency on these issues knows that there is no publicly available information on post vaccination complications in the country, which is quite astonishing and very worrying, especially if you are making these injections mandatory, and they have been mandatory. And the same group also have done tremendous work with attempting to document suspected vaccine linked deaths within the country. And I believe that they have compiled a document with more than 1,000 suspected vaccine-linked fatalities. Mm-hmm. So this group recently came out at the end of September. They wrote two letters, one to Putin and one to Shoigu, the defense minister. And they just laid out why, first of all, they just went through sort of the problems with Sputnik V, that it's totally unproven, that it's basically a gene therapy that was developed. It's based on technology that's just Western gene therapy goo. And they talked about how these sorts of injections are totally contrary to what you would do to, you know, military medicine. Like, why would you inject military personnel with something that has no real proven track record, is very likely unsafe? And they even go so far as to point out how basically this is just another form of medical experimentation that we saw in Nazi concentration camps. I mean, among other, of course, horrible crimes against humanity. And I want to make it clear, I'm not singling out the Russian military for doing this. I am very well aware that
the U.S. military
is horrendous yes, track record. Yes. And have done experiments on civilians, and it's totally abhorrent and disgusting. But you know what? I've never seen someone point out these policies and then someone saying, this is a hoax. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's just so weird. It's so weird to see how people just can't process something that is not that it is on, that this policy is on the book. It has already been implemented. As I noted earlier, Putin himself has said that nearly 100% of all military personnel in the country have been vaccinated. That did not happen voluntarily.
I just want to ask quickly, that means then that some of these reservists called up could be forcibly re-injected. Is that correct?
Well, that's a really good question. Yeah, if you are fully vaccinated, are they going to revaccinate you? That's a great question. And I don't have a good answer to that. I mean, I think you could make the sort of, you know, logical leap here and say probably yes. You know, that State Duma deputy seemed to think that this mandatory vaccination decree should apply to revaccination as well as just the two dose vaccine. We don't know yet, but we do know that this process has started. Admittedly, I mean, publicly, we only know small scale in three regions. it started though, and there's just no way around that. And it would be, why would this group of physicians write this letter to Putin if it was a hoax, if it wasn't happening? What's the right. point? Are they so misinformed that they're writing this letter about something that doesn't exist? I mean, we know the answer to this. I'm just, you know, being right. rhetorical.
This is like you said, you really have to distort reality to the point of unreality to spin this as a hoax, which again is being done. And
it's so insulting. It's so insulting when people try to do this kind of stuff. It's embarrassing for the people who do it, and it's insulting to anyone who just wants to have an honest discussion. And you know what I find so interesting, maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, but with the so-called critics, my email is publicly available. I have never turned down an appearance on any podcast or radio program, and I have appeared on shows that really span the political spectrum, and I'm totally okay with that as long as I think that the people are being sincere and are in good faith. And I've never turned down an invitation to speak, and I've never avoided an email from, you know, a colleague who had questions about my reporting or what I was claiming. And no one, mm-hmm. not a single one of these people who are claiming that this is a hoax took the time to reach out and say, hey, I have some questions about this. Can you explain it to me? No one even attempted it. And it's so disrespectful. And it shows such a lack of actual curiosity and the inability to play delicately with ideas. You know, these people are just in a little bubble.
Yeah. And on a sociological, psychological level, it speaks of a huge shift in the mental framework of people who were pushing back against this before February 24th. And I don't know what the motivations are there, and I'm not going to speculate on motives, go ahead.
Go. I was just going to say, so Robin Minotti, who has this very large Telegram channel along with several other, with Yeadon and, Corey Morningstar, is that correct?
Yes, which let me just say, I know Corey slightly, she's done amazing work and has been stood steadfast against this COVID-19 nightmare. She was in Ottawa for the trucker protests on the front line. And also, Mike Yeadon, I know, has been vehemently
outspoken. He's amazing. Yeah. I'm a huge supporter of his.
So I just want to say it baffles me that they're associated with Robin, who's putting out what you'll describe. And I know for a fact that he's mostly the one on the Telegram channel who is pumping out information. Well, but go ahead.
So about 20 minutes before I got on the air with you, I reached out to a friend who is a mutual acquaintance of Robin's, and I got his email. And I literally just sent him an email 20 minutes ago, just laying out very respectfully, look, man, you reposted this frankly disastrously false and crudely argued bizarre conspiracy, you know, alternate reality garbage. And I mean, I didn't put it that way, but that's what it is. And I just laid out the facts very simply. So I look forward to hearing from him. I hope that he will at least have enough respect for his readership, which is quite large, to show that the facts tell a very different story than mm-hmm. this ridiculous hoax narrative. And
yes.
So, yeah, I look forward to hearing. And you know what? Like, I hope that going forward, you know, I'm always interested in dialogue with people. I have friends who are self-described Putin bots, and I love hanging out with them and talking with them because we respect each other and we love talking about issues, and we do it in you know, a sincere, good faith way. And I just don't understand why people aren't able to do that.
Yeah, it's a pathology of sorts that only seems to be increasing. Just getting back to the doctors real quick, this group of physicians, I want to point out that they point out in their letter to Putin that military personnel were involved in vaccine trials in the past. So it's possible that what could be done with the forced injection of the reservists is a trial, whether the reservists are aware of it or not, a trial done on them for the new mRNA injections. It's a possibility. I don't have any evidence for that, but knowing how militaries around the world have been experimented on because they're essentially captive populations, much like university students now in the US are captive populations that are being subjected to insane injection edicts. That could be something that's at play here and something we should definitely pay attention to and perhaps try to find evidence for.
Well, Russia also is aggressively rolling out this Sputnik V nasal spray, which hasn't even finished animal trials. And they're already squirting this up the noses of Russian citizens. So maybe we'll see something like that. We don't know. We don't know. And I don't want to say that, you know, that will happen for sure. But we do know that all of these people are, you know, they're on the waiting list for mandatory vaccinations. The question is how many of them are going to get it, how quickly, and what is this going to look like?
Yeah, I shudder to think, but let's go then to essentially where we are now after the past few days and the pushback, to put it mildly, that you've received, and some other signs outside of this compulsory injection for reservists that things are not right, as you put it in your recent piece. There's something is going on that does not add up to this very simplistic binary East versus West, NATO versus Russia narrative. But first, if you want to describe a little bit of the criticism you've received, Thomas Ruper, whom we've talked about in the past, has called your work a hoax. And this has been picked up by those who follow him and regurgitated on social media, even though none of the facts you present are, they don't even really deal with the facts that you lay out, let alone negate them. So what's the deal with
Roper that? Roper starts out by claiming that Russia has not had any compulsory vaccination in any meaningful way. And that even he phrases it as something like, yes, it's true that some employers mandated, you know, they with 60% of their employees to get vaccinated, but that would be impossible to actually implement in practice, because how can you determine the 60% of your employees who get, as if it's impossible to calculate that or organize that. And as I put in my piece, not only was it possible and not only did it happen in every region of Russia, many regions upped the ante. After they reached 60% or 65%, they went up to 80%. Some regions had 100% vaccination rate for all public and private organizations. That's how he starts his argument by again, I'm sorry, I don't know how else to say it, but this guy is raping reality. He's assaulting observable reality in a way that is truly shocking. And he lives in St. Petersburg. So there's no way, I do think that I have to give a little bit of leeway to those who just have no real connection to Russia, but might feel compelled they have to weigh in, and they just don't really know their facts. And it's unfortunate that they spread, basically lies, but I guess you could, you know, be charitable and say, well, they started messing it with topics that they shouldn't have. But Roper is a self-described Russia expert who speaks fluent Russian and has lived in St. Petersburg for what, like close to two decades, right? So What is his excuse? And then he goes on to claim his big slam dunks, this is a hoax argument, is that he allegedly has a direct line to the Russian Ministry of Defense because of his work in Donbass. And he called up this unnamed person, and he has a one-line response, which is, these are Russian citizens, and vaccinations are voluntary in our country. Which, if you work for the Russian Ministry of Defense, you know that's not true, because the Russian Ministry of Defense has a compulsory vaccination policy. And that person on that, you know, other end of the line, whether he exists or not, I mean, assuming he exists, was vaccinated.
Assuming the phone call even exists.
Assuming the phone call. And so basically what you have is Roper claiming a slam dunk hoax because he has a one-line response from an unnamed source in the Russian Ministry of Defense, making an provable lie, a false statement. And I'm on the other end here citing official government information from official government portals, and public announcements put out by several regions within Russia, and pointing out that basically every single person in the Russian military up until now has been vaccinated under this mandatory vaccine decree, which exists and has existed since June 2021. And people are acting like this is some sort of controversy. There's nothing. This is just Roper making up Kremlin fan fiction. This is just Kremlin erotica. He's literally right. You know, there's people who write like the Harry Potter or like fan fiction. That's what Roper is doing here. And people are buying it. I don't get it. It's not, I'm not even angry. I'm embarrassed. I'm genuinely embarrassed for Roper and other people who are pushing this garbage.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed. I'm more so just upset in many ways because these people were, well, most of them at least were previously allies in this fight against, again, what I see as one of the two biggest threats to humanity right now, the other being nuclear annihilation. And you also point out in your third article, which looks at Roper's work discrediting, in inverted commas, your work, you also point out that he's been a champion of Russia's digital ruble and vehemently arguing that it's somehow different and
he's a champion benign, of Sputnik V. He claims that Sputnik
compared to other CBDCs. Right, yeah,
He's fine with Sputnik V. He thinks it's great. So, and I'm going to write about that in the future because I did a deep dive on his past articles and I found some truly astonishing claims that this guy has made. But anyway, this needs
to be brought out though, because these are the people who are pushing this sort of zeitgeist again, that Russia is an alternative and resistance to a unipolar world order, and life is going to be much better once they win in Ukraine and get all that they want on the world stage. And it's just pure delusion when you look at the facts on the ground.
I don't disagree, but I would say you don't even have to go that far. Just like, why, how is it okay that, for example, you know, imagine in alt media, you had a guy who was extremely critical of Sputnik V and everyone thought that was cool, but vehemently defended Pfizer. What would you think of someone like that? You know, like, and also why is it okay that Russia is forcing unproven genetic slurries into their citizens and everyone looks away and then it's considered this, you know, Nazi war crime in the West? And why do we have these double standards in the English language media? I can guarantee that Russians don't feel that way. Russians understand what's happening. They don't feel good about this. They don't say, well, we're getting forcibly ejected, but you know, it's okay because they're doing it in Canada. No, that's not how they see it.
Right. And as we've talked about in the past, Russians have by and large been resistant to these insane COVID measures from social distancing to lockdowns to masking to injections. So I don't doubt you when you say that they see this for what it is. Now, I want to quickly, in the time we have left, talk about some other developments outside of this injection campaign that point to the fact that something is not right. There's more than meets the eye going on here. And one of those is that Russian gas is still flowing through Ukraine. Reuters published an article on this on October 3rd. So Russia is still paying Ukraine to transit gas through Ukraine to Europe, by the way, which is still buying Russian gas. So there's that happening. And then I want to point out too, a lot of people have made much of the fact that Putin's profile disappeared from the World Economic Forum website. But if you want to look at where the center of globalist power is, I always argue, look at the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland. And in their most recent annual report for 2021-22, if I'm not mistaken, yes, 2021-22, on page 132, there's part of the list of the banks who are still part of the Bank for International Settlement or still fall for the bank under the Bank for International Settlements umbrella. Central Bank of the Russian Federation is still on there. And that's a big deal because that means that Russian transactions on an international scale between central banks, at least in theory, are still being moderated or mediated by the Bank for International Settlements. And again, this is one of the top globalist entities, if we want to talk about globalist entities. And again, as cliche as it is, follow the money is cliche because it's true. So those two bits of evidence right there speak to the fact that there's much more going on than this binary narrative we've been hearing for the past almost 8 months now. So just in the last three minutes, can you give your assessment of that?
Well, just very briefly, in my opinion, it's absolutely unacceptable that Russia and Ukraine can negotiate gas transit via Ukraine while both countries are mobilizing citizens, you know, at penalty of imprisonment to kill each other. And I've heard the counter argument is Russia is just honoring its contracts. It's just trying to be a good partner, which is nonsense. You can't. The first thing you should do before you go to war is exhaust all other possibilities. The first priority should be the protection of the Russian people. If you're a if you're a Russian government that actually cares about Russians, and it makes absolutely no sense to start a war without first shutting off the gas. That's a huge bargaining chip. Why didn't Russia shut off the? Why didn't Russia say, look? Back in January and February of 2022, when, you know, you had this ultimatum, why didn't Russia first say, look, we want the Minsk agreements to be honored. We want the shelling of Donbass to end immediately. We want, you know, negotiations. We want autonomy for Donbass. And if you continue to refuse to settle this peacefully, we're shutting off gas. And, you know, the other, which by the way, would directly affect all the other signatories of the Minsk agreement. And you say, you decide, you know, this is, and, right. And if you don't think that that would be a better alternative to what has happened, I don't know what to tell you because sending tanks in Ukraine has not worked out very well. It hasn't accomplished any of the listed objectives after 7 months. So it seemed like a pretty good idea. Like at the very least, it seemed like the most humane way of at least getting people to sit down at the negotiating table and talk seriously about these issues. And this idea that you can, you know, you still have this cooperation and partnership, even though you are forcing citizens of, you know, one another's countries to vaporize each other. In my opinion, this is stomach churning, nauseating bullshit. And I consider it to be
we have to leave it there, but thank you so much for summing this up. There's much more we could get into, but we will do that in the
future.
Riley,
thank you. It's always fun talking, man. All right, take care.